It kind of got buried in the news because many of us were concentrating on the whistleblower story. But in case you missed it, the UN says the climate crisis is, surprise, surprise, already here. It's worse than thought, and the changes are coming and coming quicker than they thought. Welcome to Monday. Thanks for being a part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. And boy, the weather has been something else around here recently. Fantastic. And I know it can be difficult to think about a climate crisis when it's so beautiful, but that's what we're going to do. And you can always opine on our topic. And I'd really like to know how much this latest news meant to you. That news I was telling you about out of the UN. In a moment, I'm going to explain why I'm asking you that. Now, to reach us, you can send us an email. We're at tfs@wshu.org, or you can check us out on Facebook at Full Story WSHU, and you can leave a comment there. Let's bring in our first guest. It's always great to welcome him back. Professor Robert Brinkman is Director of Sustainability Studies at Hofstra University. Hey, Professor, thanks as always for your time, and I hope you enjoyed your weekend.
Well, thanks a bunch for having me again. It's nice to talk to you.
It's our pleasure. So I had to travel a bit this weekend, and as often happens nowadays, when people meet me and they find out what I do, they offer suggestions for shows, lots of suggestions. And of the 10 or so people I spoke with, not one mentioned the climate crisis, and which got me thinking. And they talked about many other issues that they were dealing with and that had their attention. And it got me to wondering if the climate warnings are now getting through, or if this constant drumbeat of bad news is wearing some down. What's your take?
Well, it was a little bit of a slow news week, wasn't it?
Just a little bit.
but in reality, I think people are getting more in tune with what's happening with the climate. I mean, there's a lot of attention on these strange weather extremes we've been having all over the world. Plus, what we saw last week with Climate Week at the UN, with a lot of attention being paid to some of the speeches that were made and the young activists that were present in New York City. So there was actually quite a lot of news, but I think it was, with everything happening in our country with the political situation, I think a lot of it got tamped down over the last several days.
Okay. With that in mind, how bad was this latest report from the UN?
You know, it's kind of a mixed bag. It reviewed a lot of what is happening politically around the world and trying to build consensus on what to do. It's kind of a post-Paris agreement review of where we're at. And there's some good news and bad news. The good news is if you look at the developing world, places say like Kenya or Kazakhstan, these places are doing some pretty amazing things to try to mitigate climate, and they're actually developing climate action plans. They're revising and improving upon what they've already done. So there's some great stuff. But then when you look at the developed world, places like Europe and the United States and Australia, we see that there's some slowness in what we're doing. We're not being as proactive as nations on many of the issues that we're facing. So that's one of the challenges. And the big bad news out of the report is that we're still seeing greenhouse gases increase in the atmosphere. So even though we're doing a lot, we're still producing more.
If we could localize it even more, New York State has one of the most ambitious plans now to combat climate crisis. In your opinion, Professor, is the New York plan realistic? Can it be done? And economically, is it feasible?
Yes, it can be done, and we have to do it. It's the right thing to do. The challenge that places like New York State and even cities around the country and other states face is that we have very little leadership at the national level from our government. So we see kind of a patchwork quilt approach on how regions like a state or like a city are addressing climate change. So you go from a place like New York State and you go to a place like Florida, they're doing very different things, or Texas or Wisconsin or California. everybody has their own approach, but we don't really have a common goal as a nation. So you end up with a lot of different types of policies emerging all over the place, whether it's at the state level, city, or local level.
So you hit on the exact point of this program, because as I mentioned in the opening, Governor Cuomo has been meeting with Connecticut Governor Lamont, and they've been talking about vaping and the legalization of marijuana. And so my question is, why can't all the states in the region, New York and Connecticut, plus New Jersey and Massachusetts and Rhode Island, why can't they get together to come up with a regional plan to combat the climate crisis, work together?
Yeah, unfortunately, there hasn't been regional leadership or national leadership to try to pull these things together. Now, Connecticut does have a plan. It does have a group working on it, but it evolved in a different way than the New York plan. So you end up with very different things because they were not charged by a federal agency, say, to develop a climate action plan. And so every place has their own thing. And if you went to another state, you'd find that it evolved in a whole different way than Connecticut or New York State.
Are we looking at a new paradigm here? I mean, if it seems the way it's developing that states across this region are going to have to band together to do something that the feds aren't doing?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of discussion over this for a couple of decades. It's not that the lack of federal leadership just emerged under the present administration. We didn't have a lot of leadership overall on climate change policy at the federal level in terms of providing guidance for local governments. I mean, there were some good things that happened under the Obama administration, but one of the challenges we face is that we don't have a national goal or national initiatives that where the leadership of our country is asking states to do a particular thing. And that's where we run into difficulty. Some states do very little. Other states like New York do a tremendous job. Now, there are some regional initiatives on pollution that many are familiar with. For example, there's regional cooperation on pollution that's associated with acid rain. And so there are ways and policies that we can do make this happen at a regional level more effectively. But I do have to say, Connecticut and New York are doing their own thing, and they're doing things okay. You know, I mean, every state is doing something different, but Connecticut and New York are doing something, which is a good thing.
Do they need to bring in the other states if Connecticut and New York start to work together a little bit more? I mean, do we need to expand the circle, if you will, for Massachusetts and Rhode Island and New Jersey?
What I would like to see is a national policy that would set a national target and that would ask states to reach their own policy goals around the national goals associated with the Paris Climate Agreement. That, I think, is the best way to handle it. I mean, there certainly are regional cooperation plans that occur for other pollutants and other issues, and certainly we could look at that. But my hope is that we develop a national policy soon.
But if we're realistic and if we're honest, I mean, that's not going to happen in the next 2 years, will it?
No, not certainly not under the current administration. I mean, there's I think they're still trying to get their head around whether or not there's climate change, which we all know what the reality is there. And when you have an administration that isn't really engaging the public on one of the most important policy issues facing our population today, we've got some serious issues. And that's where the local leadership is important. The state and local government leadership right now is very key to our success as a nation in trying to turn the corner on climate change.
Professor, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this in the past, but in terms of New York's climate change plan, are business leaders behind it?
Yes, many of them are. I mean, I think that what's exciting about it is there's a lot of opportunity for entrepreneurship with this new approach to climate change in New York State. I mean, it provides opportunities for developing new energy resources, for developing energy storage, for energy efficiency. It's one of the forgotten things we talk about in energy is that there's so much we can do with energy efficiency and education of the public. So there are all these new things that can emerge as we start to make a better use of our energy resources. So I don't think that it will hurt our economy to move in this direction. It just changes it.
Professor, last question, if I can, give me your best guess. What's going to happen over the next year or two in terms of what we're going to see the states do on a regional basis around here?
Well, I think two things. I think there will be much more cooperation on climate change. I mean, like I said, the good news is that states are in this area are doing something, and that's fantastic. So it's trying to achieve really great goals. The other thing I think that we'll see is that there will be more initiatives on adaptation, climate adaptation. What I mean by that is New York State and New York City, for example, have been investing heavily in trying to make the city and the state more resilient in the face of climate change. So I think we'll see those two things emerge in the coming years.
Professor Robert Brinkman, Director of Sustainability Studies at Hofstra University. Professor, always thanks for your time, and I always enjoy listening to you.
Thanks a bunch. Great talking to you and your audience today.
Today we're talking about how the states in our region are working together or not working together to combat the climate crisis. Now, we have two guests for this segment. Jan Allen Spiegel writes for ctmirror.org, and she writes about energy, the environment, and food and agriculture. Hey, Jan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for being with us. In a few minutes, I'm going to be joining the conversation will be Carl Grossman. The professor is an investigative environmental reporter, and he's a journalism professor at SUNY Old Westbury, and he writes the syndicated column Suffolk Close Up, and he'll be coming on with us in about 10, 12 minutes from now. Jan, does Connecticut have a state plan to combat the climate crisis?
Well, there are various policies that work through essentially what would directly impact greenhouse gas emissions, which is, of course, the energy sector. But, you know, your previous guest was talking a little bit about the lack of a regional plan, but in fact, there is a longstanding regional plan. It's been going on for 10 years, which is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. It was designed, the original RGGI states were, there were about 10 of them. New Jersey pulled out at some point. New Jersey actually is getting back in. And there was just a recent report that talked about over the first 10 years of it, the RGGI power, CO2 emissions from RGGI power plants have dropped 47%, you know, basically outpacing the rest of the country by 90%. Granted, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is designed only for power plants. That's the only sector it deals with, and it's not really a cap and trade. It's more of a cap and invest type thing. But it has worked, and it is regional, and it includes New York, and it includes all of New England and a few other states, and is poised to expand. It has become, you know, frankly, a model, not just for the rest of the country, but to some degree the rest of the world. It was really a first of its kind. So there is cooperation, and we're seeing it spread even farther now with a version of RGGI called the Transportation Climate Initiative, which would even more states, the RGGI states and other states, are interested in doing something similar for motor sector emissions, which are actually the bigger sector nationally now and much bigger sector in our part of the world. So there is regional stuff, and Connecticut does have state-specific stuff, but there are some problems with it.
What are the problems?
Well, the problems may be mostly, for Connecticut specifically, part of the problem, I think, has to do with a kind of an extreme focus on the budget problems. And this notion that all has to get addressed first, and anything related to renewable energy, clean energy, kind of becomes secondary. And what we saw a couple of years ago was funding that was destined for groups, the Green Bank, the Energy Efficiency Fund, funds that were destined for them to help with energy efficiency, which will lower your need for electricity and therefore a lower need, a lower greenhouse gas emissions. Those funds were taken away. And there seemed to be sort of a lack of understanding on the part of the legislature about how these things tied together. And there was sort of this, again, lack of understanding that if they took this money, and it was arguable that they weren't even allowed to do that because it's ratepayer money, it's not taxpayer money, that it would hurt any kind of climate initiative. So there was that. There is also this laser focus on electricity rates. And yes, the electricity rates are high. The electric bills are not necessarily high because we do engage in a great deal of efficiency. And there's a notion in the business community that if we have high electric rates, that no one's going to want to come do business in Connecticut. There's probably an argument that can be made that people would come do business here because of certain climate policies, that companies like that and their shareholders like that and the people who buy their products like that. So there was kind of a tug and pull there. Those are some of the issues, you know, sort of from a political standpoint. Many of the policies are in place. We've been slow about implementing them. We're coming late to offshore wind, but we're coming in big. We were reluctant to embrace onshore wind, and that became a slow slog with a 3-year moratorium. We were very early with our standards for how much renewable energy we wanted the state to have. And then we fell behind, but now we've updated it some. You know, it's a tug and pull all the time.
Right. I know I only have you for another 3 minutes, so let me ask you this. Since you've been writing and reporting about this for years, what are you hearing from those that you know? Is Connecticut now moving fast enough? It sounds from what you're saying that the state is playing catch up, but doing it in an expeditious manner.
Well, coincidentally, just today was the deadline for offshore wind companies to put in their proposals for up to 2,000 megawatts. That would constitute about a third of Connecticut's power. Now, New York State has been way ahead of it. Massachusetts has been way ahead, but the Department of Energy and Environmental Commissioner Katie Dykes will argue that 2,000 megawatts, in fact, is a larger percentage of our total power use than those other states with their 9,000 megawatts or 3,200, 3,500, I believe it is, in New Jersey megawatts. So, yes, they're moving quickly. I mean, there are federal factors as well that could have an impact. Some of the environmental advocates will argue that, well, we're still building natural gas plants and we shouldn't be doing that. New England as a group has certainly shot down building any new natural gas pipelines. That's taken place over the last 8 years. So it's been sort of this slower than I think the environmental community would have wanted transition. Overall, their goals are in place. The question is whether all the policies will follow and we won't run into situations like 2 years ago when the funding was taken away.
Jan, we always appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Anytime.
Jan Ellen Spiegel, she writes for ctmirror.org, and Jan writes about energy. She writes about the environment and food and agriculture, and she's just one, simply put, one of the best reporters out there. Carl Grossman is with us now, investigative environmental reporter. He's a journalism professor at SUNY Old Westbury, and when he has time, he writes the syndicated column Suffolk Close-Up. How are you, Professor?
Very good. Good to speak to you.
Same here. Happy Monday to you. We all know that New York State unveiled their very, very ambitious plan a while back. What do you think of it? What do you think of the plan?
Well, largely it's excellent. And what Governor Andrew Cuomo said in signing, it's called the New York State Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. And that word leadership is key. But what Cuomo went on to say was, as Washington turns a blind eye and rolls back decades of environmental protections, New York turns to a future of net zero emissions. And what the plan calls for is by 2050, an 85% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in New York State. And this is the kind of thing that should be done nationally to combat climate change.
Mm. Professor, if we could keep it on a regional basis, I don't know if you're able to hear what Jan said at the beginning of our conversation. She said, look, you know, they've been doing this on a regional basis for a while, and it's working. And it has almost being used now as a model for the rest of the country. But I guess my question is, over the last few weeks, because, you know, I've been reading a lot about Governor Cuomo meeting with Governor Lamont, and they're talking about vaping, which is so important nowadays, and marijuana legalization. And for something in terms of the climate and the climate crisis, it just seems to me that all the leaders, the state leaders, should be banding together nowadays. I mean, what's your take?
Yeah, well, absolutely. They should be banding together, particularly because, and this is what Cuomo was pointing to, the failure of the Trump administration to move. I mean, Trump claims that climate change is a hoax concocted by the Chinese as to wind turbines, and that's central to the New York State plan, offshore wind turbines. Trump somehow thinks that wind turbines cause cancer. In any case, with the absence of federal action, it's important for states to act, and it's important for states to act together.
Professor, when I was driving this weekend, I was, you know, going through different talk shows, and I came on one, and they were talking about the climate crisis. And I'm going to paraphrase now, but one of the callers said, why the heck should we be footing the bill for this? Have you seen what China and India and some other countries are doing nowadays? We can make the right moves, but if everyone doesn't join in, then we're going to kill our economy. I mean, what do you say?
I think that's, I mean, in terms of killing an economy, consider the impacts of climate change. These extreme weather events, these terribly damaging hurricanes and other events. Consider what's going to happen when here in New York State, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation is saying if things are not done and quickly, we're talking in coming decades of at least 3-foot rise in sea level. What is that going to mean to the economy of Manhattan, for example, or Brooklyn or Long Island? Now, economically, a green energy, trying to reduce substantially greenhouse gas emissions, that makes the most economic sense.
Well, it means that when I go to Manhattan and I have to hop on the number 6 line, I'll have to wear my wading boots, right?
Well, or perhaps take some scuba gear.
Scuba gear. Hey, Professor, give me a best-case scenario. Let's take New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island. What would you like them to do together?
What I'd like to see them do together is encourage the development, both by the respective governments and by average people, of clean, green energy. I mean, I'm talking to you from a house in Sag Harbor over 100 years old, an old saltbox house, but on my roof is photovoltaic cells providing, I mean, you go back, you go out and you look at the meter, and it's constantly, even on a cloudy day, running backwards. But when I have the solar installation installed, this is about 10 years ago, there were all kind of excellent incentives. Now the federal incentive, which is a very generous one, is going to run out in about a year. The Long Island Power Authority incentive has been reduced radically. So I think what has to happen is that we have to invest so people can, like what I've done, put solar on their roofs. Businesses should put solar on factories and parking lots and so forth. And in terms of government, I've been out to see the first wind farm in the Atlantic off Block Island, Rhode Island.
Hmm.
And in fact, as I say, a key to Cuomo's plan is to have New York State generate 1,700 megawatts through wind, offshore wind. Offshore wind is better than onshore wind because the wind, I'm a sailor as well here on Long Island, and the wind is very mighty offshore. But you take a state like Connecticut, I mean, it has a coastline, and I suppose you could put wind turbines in the Long Island Sound, but there's plenty of open land in Connecticut and elsewhere in New England where onshore wind turbines can be installed. Maybe not as effective as offshore, but still plenty effective. And between wind and solar and other forms of alternative energy, tidal power, consider the rush of water going through Plum Gut, you know, just eastern Long Island, just off Connecticut. Consider wave power, which is being worked on in Scotland today, geothermal, hydropower, a long list of ways to generate energy without screwing up our atmosphere, without causing climate change, global warming, and sea level rise.
You know, Professor, I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, there are some because it comes down to that NIMBY feeling, doesn't it? And I'm just going to read to you a quick bit of a recent editorial in Newsday where they wrote, "Consider the obstacles facing companies trying to build wind farms and bring the power ashore on Long Island. The insanity is illustrated by opposition in wealthy Wainscott to a proposed power line being brought ashore well underground, mostly by owners of second homes whose primary residences are elsewhere and who would not be on Long Island much during construction, most of which is planned for the winter."
Yeah, well, it's such ignorance in terms of the realities of a wind farm. You take those turbines off Block Island, the cable that brings electricity to Block Island and then goes onwards into New England, you can't see where that cable is when it comes in at the beach where it's located. I mean, there's a manhole cover, but that's it. That's the only sign of that cable coming in. I mean, years ago, there was a concern here in Long Island, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to wind turbines being placed 6-7 miles off Jones Beach for aesthetic reasons. But what has been developed has been, in fact, the company that first brought in the wind turbines to Block Island is called Deepwater Wind. It's now been a European country, Ørsted, has now acquired it. But Deepwater Wind, for a very good reason, these wind turbines that are being planned by Governor Cuomo are way out. They're 30 miles out, and there's no aesthetic issue. I would suggest that those given to NIMBYism in terms of offshore wind should take a little boat trip, as I have, to those Block Island turbines and see. They take up a very little space in the ocean. The footprint is small. And in Europe, it's been demonstrated that commercial fishing and wind farms can coexist. And Europe has actually, far more than we, has moved forward very successfully with hundreds and hundreds of wind turbines off England, off the Netherlands, off Germany.
Professor, I always enjoy speaking with you, but I have to take a break and move on to two other guests in the next segment. Thanks for your time, sir.
A pleasure.
Carl Grossman, investigative environmental reporter, journalism professor at SUNY Old Westbury, and the writer of Suffolk Close Up. It's The Full Story on WSHU. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. And it's The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and we're going to wrap up our discussion today by bringing in two more guests. Mary Mushinsky is Democratic Connecticut State Representative from the 85th District, which is Wallingford. Representative, how are you? I haven't spoken with you in a while.
I am fine, and you're right. We haven't spoken in a while.
I hope you're well, and I'm glad you're back on the air with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Adrian Esposito is also with us. Adrian is the executive director of the Citizens Campaign for the Environment. Adrian, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yes, always a pleasure to speak with you as well.
Representative Mashinsky, you are, and you have been for a number of years, an environmental activist. So let me ask you, with your background and with you having studied the state for, well, a few decades now, is Connecticut doing enough nowadays to fight the climate crisis?
No, not yet, but we are.
I love the one-word answers.
Adrian would probably agree. But we are headed in the right direction. We're just going to have to ramp it up because we don't have as much time as we thought we had when we first started doing legislation on this back when I was chair of the Environment Committee. This was when Dr. Hansen first gave us the projections, and they turned out to be conservative.
Mm. Yeah.
So some time was lost during which people got...
Sure, sure. You know what? You cough up. Do your thing. You sound like my son over the weekend. He's fighting the same thing. Adrian, let me ask you, because you hear Representative Mashinsky saying that, is New York doing enough?
Well, New York is, it depends on what you are specifically referring to. One thing I absolutely have to give New York a tremendous amount of credit for is advancing the offshore wind offshore wind farms and the proposals, and really setting a very high goal, a very high bar for offshore wind development to replace fossil fuel power plants that we're currently using. So that's actually good news. You know, the goal is 9,000 megawatts. There are three projects right now that are going through the process on the south shore of Long Island. Collectively, it's going to add up to almost a little under, but almost 2,000 megawatts. So we're on our way to advancing offshore wind in a significant, meaningful way to replace dirty fossil fuels. That's a really good thing. But if you're talking about have we enforced our shoreline, have we, you know, made a concerted effort to protect more wetlands, the answer is no.
Hmm.
And so it depends, you know, it's a very broad question with a lot of individual specifics as answers.
Representative Mashinsky, are you okay?
Yeah, I went back and got my glass of water.
Oh, excellent. Okay, if you need more time, just let me know. You said before that Connecticut needs to ramp it up. What do you mean?
Well, we don't. We do not have so much time as we initially thought.
You know what? Go take another minute, because I don't want you to suffer by talking to us. Go take another minute. When you're ready, come back on. Just say, you know, I'm back, and I'll chat with Adrian for a minute or two.
You chat with Adrian.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Adrian, one of the reasons that we wanted to do this show today is because we wanted to talk about how the states could cooperate on a regional basis. Over the last few weeks, Connecticut Governor Lamont and New York Governor Cuomo have gotten together a few times to talk about different things. Most recently, they were talking about the vaping crisis, and they were talking about the legalization of marijuana. And I was reading the articles, and I was thinking, this is great, because a few years back, you never heard about Connecticut Governor Malloy meeting with New York Governor Cuomo. So this was a nice change. But at the same time, I'm looking at it going, well, if the climate crisis is the existential threat to our society right now, why aren't they talking about that?
Well, you'd have to ask them that question. I mean, I think that there are some collaborative things, absolutely, that can and should be done. You know, obviously, we share the Long Island Sound for the Connecticut coast and also for the Long Island coast, but also, obviously, some of Manhattan. So there's actions that could be taken to embolden the shoreline with, you know, more wetlands protections, as I said earlier, more restoration of natural shoreline features. So there are things that both states can do together. And the other, I mean, the biggest thing we can do, though, to be honest, is we have to, there's two things. One is get rid of our fossil fuels. And the second thing is even if we got rid of all fossil fuels tomorrow, we still need to prepare ourselves for sea level rise that's already taking place and will continue to take place even if we got rid of fossil fuels tomorrow. So there's a lot of planning that should be done that is not really being done, I think, in neither state.
Representative Mashinsky will come back on with us in a few minutes, but I know from our past conversations, and I know Connecticut now is trying to ramp it up and play catch up, if you will. But it seems that with New York's legislative plan, which is so incredibly ambitious, I'm wondering if New York will leapfrog the other states in the region. And if one state is in the lead, just give me your feel on this. Do the other states, if they're not doing anything, does that bring down what New York is doing? I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, it is. Look, someone has to be in the lead, right? That's the way it is. And the one in the lead sets the bar. So, no, I think New York is absolutely right. Look, we have a lot of coastline in New York. It's not only here on the South Shore, but the Great Lakes are being impacted as well, believe it or not, by climate change and sea level rise. They're experiencing flooding in the Great Lakes like they've never experienced before. So we have a lot of coastline and a lot of challenges in New York. So it is right that New York take the lead on climate change. We passed historic climate change legislation this year, which will mandate that 100% of our electricity needs will come from renewable energies by the year 2040, and that we will work to reduce carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. So we have a lot to do. It's a very ambitious program. And, you know, I think we can get there, though. I mean, we based these goals on science, and they are doable. But honestly, it's going to take a lot of political will. It's going to take some money, and it's going to take a lot of public support. So we can do it. We have to really go through a transition, though, not only our energy transition, electricity generation transition, but the public is going to have to warm up to things like, you know, electric cars and, you know, more solar, whether it's on individual homes or community solar. So we really are going to go through quite a transformation. And I think that, you know, New York and Connecticut can be national leaders. I really do. I mean, Connecticut's always rises to the occasion when it comes to protecting the environment. They've been very diligent about their work to protect Long Island Sound. They get it, and I think we're going to see a lot of good things from them.
Representative Mashinsky, are you with us?
Yep, I'm there.
How are we feeling?
Try to talk again.
See, it's a tough show to do, I'll tell you this.
Well, this topic just makes us so, you know, choked up and emotional.
Very good, Adrian. Representative Mashinsky, you were talking about what Connecticut needs to do. You said, and I believe your words were, Connecticut needs to ramp it up. How should Connecticut be ramping it up?
Well, we're looking at a 20-inch... sea level change by 2050. And then it'll keep going from there. So there will be a need to reinforce critical infrastructure such as airports, waste treatment plants, roads, maybe even Amtrak line.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because we had the transportation commissioner on with us recently, and that's one of the things I talked about with him, because they're saying, okay, we want to do X, Y, Z with the rail lines, and we want public transportation office. And so much of this runs along the shoreline, and I look at the projections for sea level rise, and I look with where the rail lines are, and I'm looking at them saying, are the planners looking at the same things that I'm looking at, because who's coordinating all this? And that's one of the questions I have.
No, they are. And, for example, in the Long Wharf area in New Haven, that's really former tidal marsh and mudflats.
Mm-hmm.
And to put anything in there will require elevating the road or the railroad or the whatever the economic development is for that site. The sea will come back and take that site, and we have to recognize that in our planning.
I'm going to ask you to take another minute or two to take a sip of water because it sounds like I'm making you suffer, and I'm sitting here feeling guilty. I mean, I'm guilty for many reasons. I don't want to do it for a talk show.
I'll get some more water, okay. And I'll be back with you.
Okay, great. Adrian, in terms of what New York is doing and what the other states are doing, we see how the Northeast has banded together on a number of lawsuits to fight what's coming out of Washington or the Trump administration. And I'm wondering if you're seeing more cooperation coming in the future from New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Rhode Island and Massachusetts getting together and working together on this.
I think we're going to see a lot of that. I really do. We have a serious, serious situation going on with sea level rise, with the increase or the potential increase of storm damage. Just a normal rainstorm now is not normal anymore. It's something that causes, you know, a deluge and flooding and infrastructure problems. And so the more we have states work together, the better off we're going to be. We, as I said, we have a climate crisis going on. I don't say that to sound, you know, theatrical or to sound like, you know, we're trying to make this an emotional thing. But this really is, when you have the sea level projections that are saying anywhere between 15 and 72 inches, depending on what report or what timeline you're referring to, either way, we have, as you mentioned earlier, we have not only just the railroads, but we have sewage treatment plants, we have nuclear power plants, we have regular power plants like the Northport and the Port Jefferson power plant. They're all on the shoreline. They're all vulnerable. And not to mention hospitals and people's homes. So this is a challenge like none other that we've ever experienced. What are we going to do? There's the issue of strategic retreat in some areas around the South Shore. There has been some buying out of homes by the federal government for people to relocate away from the shore. There has been some mandate to rise 4 to 5 feet if you're going to rebuild the home above ground level. But honestly, you know, I don't see a lot of municipalities, either in Connecticut or New York, telling people you can't build right on the shoreline. Hmm. There are no planning codes that prevent us from making the same mistakes in the future that we've already made in the past. And that is, you know, the waterfront real estate's the prime real estate, and building, building, building is continuing to happen. We're putting people in harm's way. We're putting our local economy in harm's way, and it is a big mistake.
I was just making that sound because I was agreeing with you. I haven't seen any news reports over the last few years. Maybe I've just missed it, but restricting the building along the shorefront. And even after the big storms, when you would think that some people would move away, instead, those who live there, maybe their homes got damaged, they build up even more.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I serve on the Suffolk County Planning Commission, and I see one after the other proposals for a boutique hotel. I'm like, you're in the floodplain. Why do you want to put your investment in the low-lying floodplain? This doesn't, it defies logic. It's like people don't want to believe this is really happening, but it's not a faith-based system. This is science. This is happening. You know, people don't say, oh, I don't believe in gravity, right? Because it's science. There is gravity. And the same thing is true for sea level rise. You want to debate about why it's happening, fine. You go and you debate that. But the fact is, the sea is rising. So we need for municipalities, and it's not just the state level, because the challenge is that planning and development is really done by your local municipality, a village, a town, a county. And they have virtually not addressed it in any planning code that I have seen, and we have looked. There are other areas like Norfolk, Virginia, Nantucket, other areas, Rhode Island, actually, but other areas around the nation that have begun to do this, but not New York and Connecticut. And I don't understand. I just think it's really a dangerous situation to continue to build right on the coast. We have to fortify what's already there, but we shouldn't be adding to the problem we should be alleviating the problem.
Representative Mashinsky, I hear that you're back and that you're feeling better with the 2 minutes that we have left. And I'm sorry, we'll get you back on for a longer segment in the future. With the 2 minutes that we have left, what would you like the Lamont administration to do right away?
Well, what they're doing right now is ramping up our timetable to get to 100% renewable power in a quicker time. Rather than wait until 2040 or 2045, we'd like to get to 100% clean energy sooner. And that's what Greta has been talking about when she came to the United Nations. The state already did pass legislation, and the DEP did put out bids for 2,000 megawatts of offshore wind. So we are catching up with New York in terms of wind power, and we're on a timeline for clean energy transformation, but it's not quick enough to, and my colleague from New York would agree, it's not quick enough to get us out of trouble. There is a transportation initiative, the TCI, that the New England states are involved in, that is working to, very similar to the regional greenhouse gas exchange, where the polluters pay into a fund and then the proceeds are used to create clean energy alternatives. And if that takes off, as I hope it will, we'll also be able to clean up our transportation fleet and reduce our climate change damage that Connecticut contributes. So that's a new one that's coming down the that agreement is coming, and we have a good model in Reggie for power plants, but we also need to tackle the transportation contribution to fossil fuels, and TCI will do that. So I'm feeling that Connecticut is doing steps, perhaps not as aggressive as New York yet, but we are. And I would agree with Adrienne that the coastal resilience is probably where we're weak right now. There are a few towns in western Connecticut that are going to do.
Representative, I have to hold you there, believe it or not. I ran out of time, but okay. Like I said, I'll get you back soon. Mary Mashinsky is Democratic Connecticut State Representative from the 85th District. Representative, thank you for being a good sport, and I'm sorry I put you through this.
That's okay.
Adrienne Esposito is the Executive Director of the Citizens Campaign for the Environment. Adrienne, as always, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank's the digital editor. Our associate producers, Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberto Rojas, J.D. Allen is the producer, Ann Lopez is the senior producer, and Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.